This talk was given by Jody Hojin Kimmel Sensei at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is a resident teacher at the monastery and co-director of ZCNYC. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about the temple's retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org/ZCNYC. Thanks for listening.
Good evening. This is from the fascicle we're studying, the Sangho. Ancient Buddhas say, refrain from unwholesome action. Do wholesome action. Purify your own mind. This is the teaching of all Buddhas. When you arouse and bring forth your entire body, mind, and practice of yourself and the earth, mountains, rivers, earth, sun, moon, and stars, you move the earth, and the earth in return moves you. The four elements are immediately actualized. To stop the mind does not mean to stop the activities of mind. It means your mind pervades your whole body. That's from Shinru Suzuki, that last part. So for those of you who may be new to Fusatsu, this is a ceremony where we each together and alone atone for whatever kinds of karma actions that or separation that we've created in our life. And we renew our vows to not create further harm. That's the first pure precept. Don't create harm. Practice good. Actualize good for others. Don't further separation. The ceremony itself goes back to the time of the Buddha. I actually had my body on the place where the Buddha did Fusatsu, which was wonderful in India. And he would gather there with his community to confess together. Can you imagine? Confess together transgressions where we broke the precepts. So we each were put on notice to notice ourselves. It's kind of a nice way to do it. You just say it yourself. They use the word confess. Fusatsu is translated as continuous good practice or to cease from unwholesome actions. A chance where the whole world can be revealed new to our eyes. That's what a renewal is. That's why spring is such a season of renewal, because everything is revealed new to our eyes after a winter of things being dormant and seeming not to have life, but it's all happening just the same, but we may not see it. And to make it fresh and strong again, our vows. So in the ceremony, we're encouraged to be the liturgy itself, that just because we're saying words, but to actually be one with. Let our body be liturgy, namu, be one with. So Daido Roshi he called the chapter on liturgy, making visible the invisible. And in a sense, that's what's happening with liturgy. We're with our whole body and mind, we're making visible what we can't necessarily see. So it allows us to encounter the opportunity to enter our embodiment fully, to take up in embodiment the questions of how do we live with others. So not as a way of thinking our way through, but we actually do it in practice. How we occupy our mind and body, or body-mind, as Dogen has it as one word, body-mind, not two separate things. how we relate to the body and mind of others, to rededicate ourselves to the practice of the Bodhisattva way, generate bodhicitta. I think these words are familiar, the Bodhisattva way, generating bodhicitta, the aspiration to see what's real and true, not only for our own benefit, but for the benefit of all beings. The warm spot, right, in us, to generate that warmth, to reaffirm our commitment to live a life of harmony, to live the precepts, considering living in ways as to manifest the truth of our nature, to bring to consciousness what is unconscious. Not to separate from what we create. So our embodiment begins with offerings, offerings of incense and bows, bringing the heart and mind into the container fully. So Zazen is the heart of our practice, as we know, and it happens in the body. I think most of us can agree that when we sit down, as we have for the first time, we see we have a body more than ever before. Remember those first days of Zazen, what it felt like, how much we're in this, but then when we sit down and be still, we realize, wow, we have a body. And there's a wide variety of Buddhist meditation practice. Our embodied experience is the object of our meditation, of our Zazen, the rise, be it the rise and fall of our breath. Sometimes we focus on the sound as that meets our ears, or the sensations on our skin. Yet when we sit down, we often end up trying to catch and subdue an out-of-control mind, apparently forgetting about the body's role in practice. We move up. Why does this happen? That's part of the reason that being in a body is difficult. For many of us, our bodies can be a painful and confusing place because our feelings reside there. The Buddha did not break up human experience into a simple duality of psyche, immaterial, and physical, material. He taught that our experiences can be classified into those five categories we chant in the Heart Sutra, the skandhas, or aggregates: form, the physical world; sensation, our perception of those sensations; mental formations or actions; and consciousness. And so using that framework, an emotion is not a singular cognitive event, but a series of dependent arising phenomena that the mind perceives and mistakes to be independent. The moments between perception and our conditioned response can happen so quickly. We know this, that we do not make a distinction between our initial experience and our reaction to it. And this begins to change as Zazen deepens, as we deepen our awareness. And whether we like it or not, we'll begin to notice aspects of what we can be called our body-mind that was previously lying dormant in our alaya, our storehouse of consciousness. So then we move into the gatha of atonement or at-one-ment. And I think it can just as easily be called the gatha of not being separate. If we're at one, it's a gatha of not being separate. All evil karma, all harmful action ever created by me since of old on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance, born of my body, mouth, and thought, now I see I'm not separated from it at all. Now I am at one with it all. I atone for it all. Born of my body, mouth, and thought, that is how we create action with our body, with our mouth, with our thoughts. Thought. And this separation can be between ourself and another person or another, with our body, with the sensations of our soma. We call it, we become disembodied. But most often, it's a separation between ourself and ourself. This body and mind are a moving complexity of living systems that makes it hard to foresee how a given system, be it a person or a flock of birds, will behave in the next moment, let alone the next month or the next year, just the next moment. We don't know. It's such a complex and it's unfixed and moving. That is karma. It's open. We are a mysterious, contingent, moving, energetic bundle. That's my new word that I'm exploring. Contingent. Contingency. I love that. So I wanted to explore tonight in more depth, viewing the karma of cause and effect relating to the body, relating to our body, especially as distinct from the mind. So the concept of karma, the principle of cause and effect, has been the centerpiece of Buddhist teaching. Many teachers speak about it, studying cause and effect created by our body, mouth, and thought. When Buddha developed his teaching on karma, it was not by speculating about it, but by carefully studying, close observation, exactly how things worked in his life. And this continues to be true today, right, in our practice. That the deepest insights into our karma come from studying, inspecting with focus and clarity exactly how things go for us. The principle of karma we see has two parts, the karma of cause, the karma of effect or result. So the karma of cause refers to the way of acting and the acts that create unresolved karma. It refers to the production of what we call unfinished business. So there are certain ways we act in our lives that leave some kind of hangover that will haunt us until it's resolved. And I experienced this just the other night. I was working on the Ango charts. I really needed to get them done before I came on schedule, and I knew I had meetings, and this is over Hosan, things to write up. And a friend said they wanted to stop by, and I knew they were coming. I started to work on the chart, and they came by, and I was able to just put it aside. And then someone else came, which was delightful. We were having a great time. And all of a sudden, I looked at the clock, and I went, oh, my God, here goes my night, you know. And suddenly I was like, I departed. I literally departed from them. And I started working on the Ango chart. You might see exactly where I started spelling names wrong because I couldn't concentrate on either one. And for me, that was That was some unfinished business. I was not present, and it bothered me. It really was something left unresolved in my body. And if it continues to be unresolved, it will keep feeding into or contribute to, let's call it, the weather system of increasing cloudiness, as they say on the news report, of very similarly unresolved situations that will haunt this relationship, maybe others, until the tendency is dealt with. And so the next time I saw her, I dealt with it. I said, I apologized. I said, later she wrote me and she said, oh, I went on to something else when you were saying that. And then she said, thank you. I accept your apology. I felt it. I felt it. Yeah. And according to the teachings, each of us has created a nearly infinite mass of unresolved karma in this life. And as the Gatha of Atonement states, it's beginningless, the karma of result. So that's nothing to bemoan, an infinite mass of unresolved karma. It's just we have in our alaya, vijnaya, in our storehouse, seeds of actions that are still working their way through. That's what the Buddha went through, all of that, it said. That's what the Jataka tales are about, extinguishing all those places where we separate or are unfinished in their momentum, shall we say. Now, when we attend to the karma of cause, we look at how we relate to our life and experience and see how karma is being created by our way of acting. So when we attend to the karma of effect or result, we contemplate the entire bank of unresolved karma that accompanies us in each moment, recognizing that all of this is actually the result of previous actions. So we see it much larger, not just that event, but it's the result of something larger. So the root of karma simply means action, derived from the verbal root CR. I'm not sure how that's pronounced. I'll just say kar, which is to make, means to do. So the main idea in this relationship is between what we choose to do and what we make then of ourselves, how we shape ourselves, and how we are shaped by ourselves through action, each moment, by intention. We inherit our karma from past, from previous moments of existence in the form of a self, from the elements, from the skandhas. The past shapes how we understand and construct our present intentions. So if we, in the present, can attend to that unfinished business in this atonement, in this recognition, it changes the past and it moves into how we act in the future. And all that happens now. So that's how we can atone. That's why it goes both ways. It's not a fixed thing. And this karma, and then karma moves into our future karma, which will be more or less skillful or unskillful, wholesome or unwholesome. Now, Dogen uses refrain very interestingly in the fascicle. He uses it in many ways. So I encourage you to look at that. When does that moment of refrain come? If we're looking at the ground of being, the emptiness, the unfixed nature of who we are, where there is no wholesome or unwholesome? Where does refrain from unwholesome action arrive? So if we can increase the amount of conscious awareness, mindfulness, we can then expand the range of our possible responses. So if we're not mindful of what's going on, we'll just react. But if we're seeing, if we're aware, consciously aware, we can expand how we'll actually respond out of all the possibilities. What's the most skillful or wholesome? This is the essence of our freedom in a heavenly conditioned system. And freedom means how we are able to, being able to choose how we respond to things. As Buddha put it, beings are owners of their actions, heirs of their actions. They originate from their actions, are bound to their actions, have their actions as their refuge. It is action that distinguishes beings as inferior and superior. Very fortunately, the force of karma is just as strong in positive, wholesome directions. We know this. Happiness generates further happiness for ourselves and for others. Care generates further care. Actions of kindness create greater conditions for goodness to develop. Owning the totality of our relative situation as our own creation empowers and enables us to take full response for who we are. This unfinished business created by a cause also comes about through the incomplete body-mind processing, and we experience this as tension. So tension is something's not completely processed in our body and mind, and it shows up as what we call tension. So that's good to know. So when something occurs in our life, we tend to accept a small part of the total experience into consciousness, and we often block the rest, especially if it's difficult. And a fair amount remains trapped in our body. And we find this in the form of unacknowledged feelings, emotions, sensations, insight. And this is held at bay unconsciously. We freeze, we hold, we get really tense. But when we resist our body's experience, we increase the logjam of incomplete experience, and we get a kind of frozenness. In order to hold this up, we see that we got to develop really good strategies. We turn to avoidance, avoiding it, rationalizing, denial. In other words, we go up in our head. We leave the body and we start to put it in compartments. Then we may find we need to increase the force of energy we put into locking up and numbing our bodies to maintain our repression or suppression. This is what is meant by the karma of cause. Who we want to appear to be only creates a more solid sense of this is me. And we become more and more at odds with what is held in the body. This is why our body begins feeling like it's not functioning right. The karma effect is then the totality of what we have been unwilling to fully experience at any given moment, and the way we have managed to avoid this through short-circuiting a very natural cycle. When we take time, slow way down to become conscious of the body experience, unresolved karma is what we might experience as the unlived parts of us. The separation we may experience, this something is missing part. And who we think we are in a moment as we are leaving our body behind. Sometimes people ask me about how to let go. And sometimes I say it's a matter of letting it all in. How do you let go? Let it all in. Let it all in. Let it keep moving as the contingent being that we are. Not with the mind, with interpretations, concepts, but through the physical sensations, the releasing of energy, a dream, an illness, a powerful upsurge of emotion, a charged thought or a memory, letting it in. When we see this unresolved karma come to fruition, from the body's point of view, it's already been here. It's already been here. The mind's just catching up. It's now appeared with an inevitable invitation, sometimes a demand, for us to receive it, experience it fully, and thereby resolve it, be at one with. In Zazen, with breath, let our entire being be breath. One poet wrote, "The only safety lies in letting it all in, the wild and the weak, fear, fantasies, failures, and success. When loss is ripping the doors off the heart and sadness veils our vision with despair, practice becomes simply bearing the truth." And I was wondering if it's actually our habitual way to not live through something, or if that's now. I wonder if when we worked the land, if that was the time in that mulching of touching the earth, our relationship to the earth, that we worked through things, that our mind could release into the activity of our body and the connection with the earth. We tend to live things only up to a point that we know what to do with them. At least that's what I have found. And then when it goes over that place where we don't know what to do with it, we won't go further, like into, I don't know what to do with this. And then we close, perhaps, and we open a little bit more. So here we are learning to appreciate there is a way to allow experience to flow through all the way. This is what Dogen is speaking of. The body comes from study of the way, and that which has come from the study of the way is also the body. Whole body and mind experience of the way. Our body itself is Buddha, manifesting Buddha. Let it all be absorbed. All evil, all harmful actions ever committed by me. right here in my body is Sweet Hudson River, Atlantic Ocean too. Right here, Brooklyn and Mount Sumeru, large and small. Right here, the moon and the sun, holy places, lesser places, all right here.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as meditation cushions, incense, malas, liturgical instruments, books, and more, visit the Monastery Store at monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.